Good evening, everyone. This is Countercurrents Radio, and I'm Samuel Valius, filling in for Greg Johnson. And with me this evening is Vincent James, formerly of the Red Elephants, renowned and perhaps notorious in some circles as a conservative Catholic activist. He now runs the Daily Veracity. James, it's no coincidence you're with us tonight. When I saw you on Dutch television, I just knew I had to give you a call. We finally found the bad kind of immigration. Who would have thought?
Yeah, that was pretty funny. People sent me that clip or that link, and I saw it wasn't even getting that much attention. But for some reason, a lot of people in our circle saw that clip of like them covering me on Dutch radio, and I was like, "What the heck? Why are they?" Well, it was actually just like a clip or a couple of clips of my show on there on this thing about like Idaho and like nationalism in Idaho or whatever. But it's so weird that this got a lot of attention.
It's international news. I was really surprised. It's like, hey, I know James.
Yeah, they actually did a D1. Is that Dutch too? DP1 or DK1 or I forget what it is. Or maybe that's Danish.
Is it not NPO or?
No, there was another thing that it would happen like maybe like 4 years ago or 5 years ago or something like that. I can't remember what the actual station was called, but I guess it's like sort of like mainstream media in whatever country this was in. They did like a whole documentary on me, and then like Media Matters came out and Right Wing Watch came out, and they were like, oh, this makes him look too much like too human. It makes him look too nice or too nice of a person. And so they deleted these people followed me around for like 3 days, going to like different rallies in Berkeley and stuff like this. They deleted the entire documentary. All that money that they spent flying out and on hotels and following me around, they deleted it because Media Matters and a couple of other places came out and said it made me look too nice.
So, we're not dehumanizing them
these
enough.
These Europeans. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly right.
The NOS broadcast was much along the same lines. It's like, oh, do you know that in America, people still vote right wing?
Half
you know, in Europe, you can, of course, only choose from various flavors of left wing, and you're stuck with that, of course, to the chagrin of everyone.
Yeah, I hear you. Yeah, there's a few places that are pretty okay, that are okay in Europe, though. Or maybe getting okay.
I'll be heading out to Eastern Europe soon again, which is just a breath of fresh air. You're exposed to none of the madness. People think it's still a given to be the master of your own country, you know. We can hardly imagine it. And they, as well, can hardly imagine our situation in the West. Of course, in certain Western European countries, it's much worse than others. But I think even Americans would be like, yeah, even the lack of freedom, I think, mostly. Because everything here is so structured that it's almost inconceivable the way Americans live. But then, you know, the politics just comes on top of that.
True.
Especially after the Trump era. In the 10-minute Dutch public broadcast blurb of the NOS, it opens up with the criticism that the advert to draw people to Idaho, financed by a real estate firm, which works apparently because people seem to like the lifestyle over the insane rents, extreme commuting, depression medication, and crime-ridden vibrant urban life. Who would have thought? Vince, how dare these white people mind their own business in a state that overwhelmingly votes Republican?
Yeah. So there's a couple of real estate companies here that are actually that like their names, the names of the real estate companies are sort of like obviously conservative names so that it attracts more people, more conservatives to move into the state. Now, a lot of people who are like locals would argue against this. Of course, they really don't want any more people moving here, regardless of political affiliation. But if people do move here, they would much prefer conservatives to move here than of course liberals. And and it's just been, you know, there's a, like, I've personally influenced many people to move to Idaho, and I'm involved in politics here. And I think that certainly this is something that they don't like, that, you know, We're actually able to put our thumb on the scale when it comes to when it comes to politics. They don't like that at all. That's why they have to censor us from everything, and then, you know, make these hit pieces, these international hit pieces, which is so weird.
I think, and we're going to come to that later, it's that they really feel that if whites separate and that's successful, it could set off a chain reaction. You know, this is why they're so afraid that what happened with the election of Trump, Sweden Democrats, which, you know, is far from a conservative movement, but, you know, it's the best the Swedes have, with Bolsonaro now on the exit, that was really like, oh, this might be a danger to globalism. And if people have their wish here, then who knows what'll happen? You see it with Orania in South Africa. I feel this Idaho project is a bit more significant in scale. But in South Africa, for Orania, for instance, it's also just the same type of thing. It's going to be white people minding their own business. And this seems to be an international threat, to many observers.
Well, here's the thing. In Idaho, if you go to like down to like Boise or a lot of like southern Idaho, it's not as it's actually a bit more diverse. Like you have a bit more of a diverse population. Diverse, right? As they put it, diverse population in southern Idaho and Boise especially. In northern Idaho, it's a lot less. It's a lot like 90 something percent of the population is white people of European descent. But as far as demographics are concerned, you know, they have a lot of different tools in their bag to take care to mold the demographics in the way that they want to, right? They'll just build if an area becomes too white, let's just say. I mean, they did this with like New Hampshire and a couple of other places. They've talked about this a lot. The mainstream media is pretty blatant when talking about their plans for these places that are, in their words, too white. They'll build like Section 8 housing. They'll build like high density. They'll offer federal funds to the state or the city or whatever so that they build Section 8 housing, high density housing, tons of apartment complexes. This is actually what's happening up here in northern Idaho right now. There's a lot more. There's a lot. There's more single apartments that are being built than houses that are being built. So they know that once they can do that, and this is something that happened under the Barack Obama administration as well, a lot. Like if an area was over 50% white, they would offer federal funds to build Section 8 housing, affordable housing. They know that if they build this stuff, that eventually, if you build it, they will come, as they say. So they know that they can change demographics in that way. There's, of course, as the urban expansion as well, like Coeur d'Alene, which is the biggest city up in northern Idaho, is growing. And as that grows, of course, there's going to be more, it's going to attract more diversity, if you will. So they have a lot of tools in their bag to handle this problem.
To motivate the right kind of migration, of course, coming in. For all Europeans listening, Section 8 housing is basically social housing in the United States, which of course attracts the poors, which usually comes in, you know, the racial variety. In the
For
Netherlands,
now,
we've actually
a lot of
seen.
the apartments are occupied by poor white folks, or lower income white folks. But you know, you want to, they've been doing this for a long time. They know exactly what they're doing.
Yeah, it's of course disproportional. You know, there's only so many poor whites. You know, in West Virginia, it would be a bit higher. In Idaho, it's a bit lower. And then, of course, you know, whoever comes over the border will be enjoying Mexican wages or will have no savings at all. And they will be flung immediately into the Section 8 housing, I assume. In the Netherlands, we have a sort of thing where they passed a new law where they can build a refugee center in any municipality, which is like a county in America.
Well, I read something the other day, and I posted it on Telegram, and I can't remember which European country it was about. I think it was about the UK. And it was talking about the new census data that came out, and it revealed that it was something like one in five people. Is this it here? It's one in six people in England and Wales are first generation foreigners. One in five people in Swindon are foreigners. One in three people in Reading are foreigners. And one in two people in five London boroughs are foreigners. So in plenty of European countries, it's getting quite terrible. In some of
But
these
usually
places.
those numbers will stay around that level, and that's because of fudging the numbers. Usually, you will have second generation immigrants, and then you will have the third. And usually at the third generation, both parents will have been born in the European country in question. And so they will be, by all standards, British citizens, fully right. British. You know, they become European at that point, and they're no longer counted as migrants, basically. But, you know, in America, of course, you know better because you keep racial statistics.
I think we're the only country that does that.
Exactly, especially on crime statistics. Like, everybody always, with a heavy heart, you know, looks at the FBI crime statistics, which is basically the most reliable racial indication you have worldwide, where people do this sort of thing and see the effects of multiculturalism.
Yeah, and it's actually worse than those statistics led on too. I mean, like, because although the stuff that we look at are for mostly just arrests, and as we know, we have like the lowest right now, the lowest clearance rate when it comes to in history, when it comes to homicide and when it comes to violent crimes. So, you know, 60-70% of the crimes aren't even being solved. These people are getting let back out. They're going on to commit another crime, and then they just like plead down to some lesser charge. So it's actually unreliable, but it's the most reliable data that we have in the world on crime statistics. But people instinctively know, right? People sort of instinctively, white people, non-white people, they instinctively know, you know, who is going to be more of a threat to them just because of patterns that they've recognized throughout their lives. So
it's as close we're going to get to the truth, you know, at this point, but we can always imagine it's going to be worse. If you look at leftists, for instance, or these maps that they make of, what was it, for instance, the amount of lynchings that happened in the United States. And usually they say like, oh, this was because somebody was accused of rape. And there's no way you could have, of course, proved that he did actually rape somebody. This is completely unallowed. You know, these exaggerations are allowed. Meanwhile, when we say, oh, there's high crime statistics among certain racial groups, then it's like, oh, it's because it's overblown. The system is racist. You're arresting too many of them. You know, people are allowed to fill in the gaps in their knowledge, but only in a certain direction, which is exactly what we see with this Idaho migration, that some migration is good and some migration, usually European, people of European descent, that's bad.
You're talking about Emmett Till. Yeah, Emmett Till, or I think you're referring to Emmett Till. Or one of the many, you know, thousands of cases that were just like Emmett Till. But yeah, I mean, if you look into that guy, they said that his accuser retracted or recanted her what she said about him, but she didn't. In fact, it was revealed, I think recently, we went over this on my show, that everything that she said never really changed, and that he probably did exactly what he did. And, you know, that was a time when the townsfolk got together and handled something that wasn't being handled and protected, you know, their community. You know, is it a harsh punishment? Probably it's a harsh punishment, but that's how things were like handled. And when you look at lynchings, the biggest lynching that ever occurred in America was against Italians. I think there was 28 in a single lynching incident, and they were all Italians. That was like the largest lynching, from what I understand, in American history, the largest single lynching event in American history. It was Italians who were lynched. So, you know, it's all this like victim bullshit just constantly. And it sometimes gets very difficult and very tiring to sort of like wade through the weeds and pick apart what's true and what's not true and get the message out there.
A lie always goes around the world three times before it is disproven. And when it is disproven, people usually don't even care enough about the info.
Yep, it's true.
Myself, I'm talking about the Monroe and Florence map of lynchings, which is one of those overblown maps that they use to as a learning aid, of course. But on the subject of Idaho, does Idaho have a rhino problem? For Europeans not in the know, that means Republican in name only. So somebody that is Republican but doesn't support any of the values.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. There's a lot of, I would say, both of our senators and our governor for sure And then, you know, below that, if you look at like the state ledge, state legislature, basically all around the entire state, we have what you call a rhino problem. Just people who are, and you have a lot of people who are running as Republicans who aren't even Republicans, but they know that they can't get elected as a Democrat. And so they just run as a Republican. And I think that that's like, you know, Mike Crapo, our senator, and Brad Little, who I went to go troll the other day. You know, those two are like perfect examples of this.
How is it that the Republican Party isn't boarded shut against such subversion?
Well, North Idaho got a lot of heat. The North Idaho, the Kootenai County specifically, the Republican committee, they receive a lot of heat for their system that they have in place, which is basically like a vetting system. And what they do is they rate and vet any candidate that is running for office.
Sounds good.
Just to make sure that they are actually conservative, because there's a lot of Democrats that run as Republicans, like I said. So they make sure that they're actually conservative. They call them up, they give them, because they're like, because if they recommend a candidate, then it's most likely that North Idaho, all of North Idaho, is going to vote for that candidate. There's a lot of different counties that are trying to do the same thing as Kootenai County. But for the most part, North Idaho follows what Kootenai County says. So if the Kootenai County Republican Committee says that, okay, this candidate is actually conservative, this is the one that you should vote for, it's more likely than not that that candidate's going to get elected, at least in North Idaho, the majority of votes. So it's something like that I think that in counties are trying to imitate this throughout Idaho. And once they get this down, then we won't really have to worry too much about state candidates.
Yeah.
But then you have the problem that comes into play where you have like sort of corruption on the inner workings of recommendations and maybe the rating and vetting committee. And so it could sort of like corrupt from that. But I really like the rating and vetting system of Kootenai County. And I think it should be something that should be replicated throughout the country.
Yes, it is more easy to keep tabs on the commission and to have the commission do a good job and to make sure that people are definitely held accountable for the people who they vet and who they vouch for as well, than it is to have this chaos of anybody that's registered as a Republican can actually run as one, which is, of course, not how it works. Could you tell us more about your work with conservative immigration from the West Coast to Idaho?
Oh, so I moved back in November of 2021. So November, about a year ago, and I moved in like the middle of winter. Basically, it was like this winter, it's not too bad for right now. I don't know how bad it might get, but it was like snow. I mean, there was a couple of days where there was like 2 feet of snow. You know, this is something I'm not used to. I come from California. I'm used to going to the beach. Yeah. I'm used to like boogie boarding and having nice weather all the time, basically. And I come to Idaho, and it's the weather is obviously the downside. Everything else is an upside. Everything's cheaper. It's cheaper cost of living, cheaper housing, cheaper food, cheaper gas, cheaper insurance, cheaper registration, cheaper, literally, basically everything. And then, of course, you have the politics that come into play. You have better gun laws. You have you don't need a permit to conceal carry or to open carry. Out-of-state residents can open carry or conceal carry. You can go off a couple of miles down the road and go shoot on federal land and go blow up Tannerite. You can walk into a store and not, you know, have to wait for your gun after you've purchased it. You can buy Tannerite. You can buy ammunition, all the ammunition you want without going through a background check. People are conservative here. People agree with you here. You can basically talk openly. And you can actually get involved in politics a lot easier if this is something that you're interested in. So there's a lot of upside. Couple of downsides, and the main downside, of course, is the weather. You have like 4 months here, which are like basically warm, but it's really beautiful. It's way more beautiful that I think than California was, because California, what you got a beach, and what else? What do you have? You have the beach, you have the national parks. Okay, those are great.
Exactly.
But here, there's like mountains all around. There's trees all over the place. You have fall colors, it's lakes, hundreds of lakes all around you.
Yeah.
And it's very beautiful. And so there's a lot of upside, a couple of downsides. And I don't particularly say, hey, you guys should come and move here. I just say, no. You know, here's what my experience is. On my Instagram, I post pictures of some of my experiences. On my show, I talk about some of my experiences, and people are influenced to move up here. There's over a dozen that I know of that have told me that, you know, are either planning on making the move or have made the move already, specifically because of the stuff that I talk about on my show.
Yeah.
So, or my Instagram, which is weird.
Oh, it'd be great.
So I don't really help someone move up here or do anything like physically to help people move up here. But if someone moves up here and they want to connect, they want, you know, friends, they want to make connections, mm-hmm. they want some social capital, I will help facilitate that.
Oh, it'd be great if you could form a Republican expat community and also work hand in hand with those real estate companies, you know, just get the whole ball rolling and see where it leads.
I mean, Idaho basically is a Republican expat community. Everyone here is basically from somewhere else. Not everyone, but a lot of people that you meet are from somewhere else. And a lot in the over since 2020, and one of the main reasons was the COVID restrictions. COVID put a nail in the coffin for a lot of these people when it comes to California, exactly. Portland, Seattle.
Now everybody in Europe is done with it as well. We're still holding our hearts right now to see if they're going to lock it down for the winter again. But so far the talk has been low because I think the politics also knows they can't jam another vaccine down people's throat. They can't jam another lockdown down people's throat because everybody is really at the edge of putting up with the government shit. And I believe they know that from their focus groups.
What is it like in Europe still? Are most of the restrictions gone? Is it?
Yeah. You can basically go anywhere.
Isn't that funny how it was totally serious. And actually, if you look at the case rates that they're reporting, it's basically on par with what was happening this time last year. And I'm sure it's probably going to be the same through the winter. But all of a sudden, they're just like, oh, restrictions are lifted. Mask restrictions, vaccine mandates are lifted. Forget about anything that we just did. In fact, we want an amnesty. We want to apologize kind of for what we did over the past 2 years. And we just want to call a truce. And you know, everyone's just basically forgotten about it. But and even people on our side have basically forgotten about it. But it's very important to forget, because you have to really remember, especially when making political decisions at the voting booth. You have to really remember what these people did and who were the people were over the past 2 years. Because if you don't, then you get people like Brad Little who are able to just get up there on stage and be like, oh, there was no restrictions. What are you talking about? There was no restrictions.
Yeah. No, it's most people are not political warriors, as you very well know. It's really the part of influencers and people who hold on to these things to keep promoting that message, to go out, do the heckling of the politicians, to promote the message, to put it out there. And so that when it matters, the message gets put out there when it is relevant, because people are going to forget next week anyway. This has also been the way news media has been structured. You know, you're going from event to event every single day just so that you forget. You know, people will forget the news of yesterday, let alone last week, last month, or 10 years ago. You know, it's a running gun battle. And because of the broadcasting strategy that has been maintained, that's what it's turned into. And so people are conditioned to forget immediately, which is, you know, how they would like the electorate to be.
True.
And I feel is how it's going to go for COVID as well. You know, it's like, oh, please get your next shot. We won't do any lockdowns. You know, people aren't dying anymore. COVID's gone to sleep. It's okay.
COVID's gone away. And then they'll say well, it's like this now. The restrictions are gone because people got vaccinated. It's but there's the vaccination rates are not that much different now today than they were, 7 months ago, 8 months ago, when some of these restrictions, a lot of these restrictions were still in place. Don't give me this bullshit that it's because people got vaccinated or people social distance enough or something like that. That's what they tried to say with the mask. They're like, well, we can remove the masks now because people are, it's not spreading as quickly because people social, it's just complete bullshit. And Of course. I think COVID woke a lot of people up. But I also think that, like you said, like a lot of people just sort of like, up, onto the next thing. Now we're on to Ukraine. Like they locked you down for 2 years straight. They shut your business down. They shut down all the treatment centers. They shut down all the churches. A lot of the liquor stores stayed open. They killed people off because people went back to drugs and went back to drinking because the treatment centers were shut down. They are dying of like cancer now because the cancer screening was delayed. They're dying of all sorts of other diseases because their immune system has been completely destroyed. They shut the country down, the world down for 2 years in this great wealth transfer that occurred. People now all of a sudden, all the restrictions are lifted. Mask restrictions are lifted on the planet and everywhere. Vaccine mandates are gone. You can go to any country. You can go to any place now. And now all of a sudden people are just like, well, that's over. Now on to what? Now on to Ukraine. Now on to Elon Musk or talking about Twitter. It's like, guys, we have to remember. We have to remember what they did to us. This has to be in the back of our mind.
Mm-hmm. Most people are unvaccinated right now because their coverage has run out. You know, it's like a MetLife subscription right now where you just have to see if you don't get the shot enough, if you're not paying your subscription, if you're not getting it enough from, of course, tax money donations, then you're unvaccinated, you're not protected, and you're killing grandma. You know, that's basically what they tried to do with this fear propaganda and instill this compliant populace that keeps getting their corporate product, you know, even if it's from a large pharmaceutical company. And doesn't ask too many questions because the hysteria keeps moving them towards the next subject. You know, it's pushing and pulling.
That's true. Someone in the live chat says the news cycle is basically dictating what you think and how you think. I mean, that's obviously true. We know this. This is the reason why they want the control over the flow of information. This is the reason why it's so important to them. Like a lot of people say, well, I don't believe the media. The media lies. I don't believe the media. Yeah, but your entire – everything, the way that you think, especially politically, the way that you – your worldview, it is molded by the news cycle, is molded by what you see in the media. And if you just follow that, then it doesn't matter what you say. You can say, well, I don't believe the media. The media lies. Or these journalists, of course, they lie. It doesn't matter what you say about that because right now I can see that the way you think, what you're saying about Ukraine – not you specifically, but people in general –
yes,
shows that – the way that you think is molded by the news cycle. And on the masks, on the mask part of things, you know, the reason why people would ask me, well, why do they want people to wear masks if they didn't work? Like if they, what's the conspiracy behind that? The masks were a part of the fear that they needed to drive this whole thing through,
It's a visual identifier, just like being a religious Muslim, for instance. You wear the hijab, you show that you are a pious person and that this is part of your culture. For this liberal propaganda, it was the mass.
Well, not only that, but it also played into the fear that they needed to drive this thing home, to drive this thing through. Because if people see other people with masks on, then this makes them more likely to be afraid of what's going on.
But not to deviate too much from our earlier subject, I see that only 3 counties in Idaho actually voted Democrat: Blaine, Latah, and Tutton. Did the Dutch News properly represent the general attitudes in the state by running directly to Shelby Roggenstad?
So only 3 counties in the state voted what? Democrat?
Yes.
Is that what you said? I thought... Yes. Ada County, I might be wrong, but I thought did Ada County vote Democrat too, or did that vote Republican? I thought Ada County voted Democrat, or maybe it was just specifically Boise.
Oh, what I saw from the gubernatorial was these 3.
Yeah, well, Boise's pretty liberal. It's been leaning liberal for a while. Really, they have like a mayor there who's a woman and who's like gay, who like marches in like these gay pride parades. So that's in Idaho. That's that's Idaho. That's happening in Idaho. And you know, a lot of people are complacent here because they don't really understand, you know, what this place can turn into very easily. Like they don't understand. A lot of people don't come from California and they don't really understand like what this place can turn into. This is why when people come from California to North Idaho, they're a little bit more aware And they specifically moved for political reasons, which is, by the way, throughout history, pretty unprecedented, where people are moving, picking up and moving for political reasons. It's like this big sort that's happening. But it's the people that come from California and move to Idaho that sort of have a better understanding of what the place can turn into and are less complacent. And a lot of the locals here who have lived here for a long time, because they think that Idaho's just always going to be Idaho. But, you know, they used to say, don't let Idaho turn into California. Now they're saying, don't let the rest of Idaho turn into Boise. What are they going to be saying in the future? And so this is the reason why local politics are very important. And I always say they're more important than national politics are. But as far as the Dutch news coverage, no, it didn't represent Idaho correctly. What news does, especially when they're intentionally trying to create a hit piece, because yes, the majority of Idaho still is deeply, deeply conservative, especially North Idaho, which is the place that they were focusing on the most.
Is it also that the population in Idaho is heavily concentrated to urban centers, or is it that in North Idaho, most of the population lives? How would you describe that?
I would say most of Idaho, or most of the population is, well, I mean, they are in like cities or whatever, but it's more rural than I would say a lot of the country, right? As we know, as these cities sort of grow and as more and more people move into these urban centers around the country, it tends to be the case that, you know, these places become more liberal. Whereas in Idaho, you know, you have a big city here and there. You have like Boise, which has like 200,000 people or something. It's not really like a massive population. You have Coeur d'Alene, which is like 40,000 people. You have Post Falls, which is like 20, 30,000 people. You know, these aren't like massive populations. For all intents and purposes, it's really, really like a small town here still. Like I see people that at like baseball or hockey or the grocery store, and then I see them, and then, you know, we're like doing things in some other place together. We're like, oh, I just saw you the other day. So it's basically still sort of like a small town, and I think that's one of the things certainly that's keeping it the way that it is politically.
Yes, it's not the type of urban centers you're used to with LA or the other big cities around the West Coast. The NOS correspondent for America, Marike de Vries, says that conservative immigration, and here it comes because we're going to load it out about small towns, radically changed little towns like Sandpoint. This is apparently intolerable. But then what are you and I supposed to think about replacement migration, for instance?
Yeah, well, Sandpoint is pretty liberal, though. Sandpoint is like you walk through Sandpoint, you see some businesses downtown, and it's a small town. You know, you see some businesses downtown, they have like the gay pride flag in their window or whatever. And maybe people don't go there because they don't give them their business because of that. I have seen like businesses struggle because they've decided to put up a gay pride flag in their window in Sandpoint, Idaho. But that county though, that Sandpoint is in I think it's Bonner County. I'm pretty sure it's Bonner. Is deeply conservative. It's just Sandpoint. It's just that one part of the county that is leaning more liberal.
Yeah.
Maybe Sandpoint might change. We'll have to see this coming election. We'll have to see on Tuesday during the midterms. We'll have to see if the conservative migration from California and some of these other places into Sandpoint, which was a big spot for people to move to during COVID, we'll have to see if that changed anything. We'll see if they're right about that.
Man, I just can't believe the balls of the Dutch public broadcast where they say that white immigration, you know, even if it's conservative, radically changes little towns, you know, especially now with the migrant crisis in Europe. It started in 2014. It never ended since. I'm sure in America, you know, with the border crisis, it hasn't been all fun and games either. But put it down to that Americans moving inside their own country is somehow a heinous act. Just, it messes with me.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, here's the thing. We need to make it true for the other side as well. right? If conservatives feel, and I talk about this on the show all the time, if conservatives feel uncomfortable in the blue states that they live in, and they move because of for political reasons, which again is something that's like really at this rate is really unprecedented throughout history, then why is it okay? Like, why are we making it comfortable for people who are totally liberal? Like they destroy their cities. They destroy the cities that they live in. They vote to defund the police. They, the police pull back, crime rises. They have homeless people just like shitting on the street in front of their house. And then they move to places like Idaho. And then they're just like, well, gotta vote the fascist out. Gotta vote against Republicans. But why are they comfortable? But why are they comfortable? Why are they able to be here and be comfortable here in conservative states? It's because we're too tolerant. We're too tolerant of them. We have to be less tolerant of them. We have to pass laws that make them uncomfortable in these places. And then we will truly have like a big political sword in the country. But this is starting to happen on the other side as well. There are articles that have been floating around that have covered in the show where they talk about like liberals, they don't like the abortion laws and they don't like this, that, and the other, and they're moving because of that. But we have to go further. It's not enough. It's not enough. You have to go much further. I want to see like homosexuality, like gay marriage banned. I want to see a total revamp of the curriculum in schools to where it's like pro, like the conservative values, Christian values, just things that make these people cringe and flee. Like you have, and then on the individual level, we should be like trolling these people just to make them even more
And then
uncomfortable.
everybody can be happy because we can live separately in our own little
Yeah,
bubbles, and
but they
life
won't
will
let
go
us.
on. This is what they don't understand. Globalism is a totalitarian ideology.
Right.
It's really like, oh no, there's white people in Idaho living according to ways we don't approve of. What the fuck?
Right.
The NOS mentions Idaho is a fast-growing state in terms of inhabitants, mostly from states where conservatives no longer feel welcome. Could you explain what sentiments are really driving European Americans to move to places like Idaho?
So driving people out of California. Well, it's like what I said. It was mostly due to the COVID restrictions. I think that was the last straw for a lot of people.
Yeah, that
They
was
were
the biggest
talking
one.
about forcing my kids to get like vaccinated, and the masks go away, and then the masks come back, and they're like, "Well, if you're vaccinated, you don't have to wear a mask." Oh, actually, you do. And then it was just like back and forth, just like constant, just like never ending bullshit. And that was what drove a lot of people out. Like I said, it was like the last straw for
Oh, yeah.
people because people know that these masks don't work. They know. I mean, the studies have been done on them. Okay, the studies have been done. If you wear a mask, you're retarded. Like if you wear a mask where you're not like forcefully where you're not like forced to wear a mask. If you wear a mask now, I still see people with masks on. If you wear a mask now, you're literally retarded because the studies have been done on them. They even admitted this at the beginning of that of this, where they said they don't work, they don't prevent the spread of respiratory-like illnesses because the studies have been done on the flu, and the flu is larger than COVID. So why do you expect your medical mask, your paper mask, your bandana that you wear around your face to do anything? So people were just like sick of it, and there's a lot of people who are still planning on leaving California that I know personally who are planning on coming up here, going to Texas, going to some of these other places because it was just like the last straw.
Yeah, it's
Sorry?
surprising that it wasn't the crime, it wasn't the drugs, it wasn't the homelessness, it wasn't, the lack of order or the mass immigration flooding into the state or the massive taxes people have to pay or the property prices, but that eventually what made them lose their shit was really in the COVID period.
Well, a lot now, like a lot of crime and the homelessness is getting to people now. So like I said, there's going to be a next like last straw. Something else is going to happen. And then you're going to have the other people come and follow us. And it's going to be like, and so what? So that's going to be fine so that we could just like turn Idaho into like a homeless cesspool of AIDS and monkeypox. Like, no, like they should not feel comfortable here.
But that's progress, when crime
Right.
goes up, it becomes vibrant. There's a couple of extra restaurants you can dine at. This is truly the highest living, the highest culture. People can pay taxes. Don't you know that's what citizenship means? You get to pay taxes. It's great. Another fun thing, which I found pretty heinous, is that the NOS had to dig back 23 years to get footage of a right-wing manifestation, you know, with the Klan and the shields, etc. Which makes it seem, and they also make it seem like Idaho is a statewide foreign legion where people tend to hide from the government. How do you see the people that live in Idaho?
The view that people have of Idaho. Like I want people to think that Idaho is full of this and full of that, and it's like too dangerous to go to Idaho. But but to be honest, it's like not really like that. Like you have some places like that, you know, are just like people who are just living on their own, living on their land, hunting when they want to with their, you know, wood fire furnace, heating their homes and maybe part of a militia or, you know, a group or something like that. But for the most part, it's really not like that. Like they totally, in that whole documentary, they totally misrepresent what Idaho is and who is Idaho.
I really get the feeling it's just this cozy pre-migration European country almost, where people just live, you know, almost a bit naive about the outside world and its dangers and our many enemies. And they just are, you know, trusting, nice, open, free, you know, all the things we actually look back on positively in our lives. And obviously, this is the greatest evil mankind has ever known, you know, that way of life.
Yes.
Let's see. There was a snippet about Ross Fulcher where he was concerned about media representing the ideas of Republicans, et cetera. And it's, you know, intentionally cut to arouse suspicion about him. What do you know about the local Republican scene that is actually okay with our way of thinking?
Yeah, a lot of people are. And, you know, frankly, I would say a lot of people in general, not just like people who are involved in politics, think the way that we do. They're just not, you know, they just don't say it. Things that I say are what, you know, 90% of people are thinking. As far as the media sort of shaping or molding how Republicans govern, I think that that's 100% true. I think that a lot of Republicans are more afraid of what the media would have to say about some of the things that they do, the reaction to what has been happening in this country, than what is happening in this country. I think they're a lot more concerned with what the media is going to call them, what the media is going to label them, than what's happening to the country right now. And so this basically dictates how they govern, what they say, laws that they propose, laws that they pass. It's like with Brad Little, right? He vetoed any bill that was aimed at banning any of the mask mandates, any of the vaccine mandates here. He reversed or repealed any action that was made by his lieutenant governor, Janice McGeehan. When he would go out of town, she would ban the vaccine mandates, ban the mask mandates, and he would come back and reinstate them. Because why? Because he is everything that the way that he thinks, the way that he governs, is completely shaped, completely molded by this. This framework that has been constructed by the elites, who all just so happen to think the same way.
It's almost bizarre to have politics polarized that much that you have enemy infiltrators running around just doing the exact opposite of what the party line is.
Yeah, like I said, Democrats can't get elected, so they run as Republicans, and that's another big problem.
In the part afterwards, it cuts to you wielding an AR-style weapon with all manner of potentially mass-destructive attachments, possibly loaded with POC homing bullets. How many people have you killed for the white Taliban thus far?
Zero.
I really wonder in that part, because they cut to you and it's like, oh, this is obviously a violent extremist, but they really have to try hard. You know, it's like that earlier documentary that they talked about that was about you that got cut off the internet. where do they get these wild conspiracy theories that anyone related in this story is even at all dangerous or has a negative agenda? It really, I feel like it's projecting almost.
Yeah, it's totally projecting about individuals and even more general than that. When you look at, you know, what they say when it comes to domestic terrorism and our greatest threat to the country right now isn't foreign terrorism anymore. It's domestic terrorism. It's white nationalist, white extremism, white supremacy. And a lot of this is all based off of a report that the ADL did, the Anti-Defamation League did about domestic terrorism not too long ago, that they update every year, which has even been picked apart by mainstream news organizations like the Washington Post, who has come out and said that beware of the statistics on domestic terrorism, right-wing domestic terrorism. But they continue to cite it. They continue to refer to it, and they continue to spin this lie. It's just like with what happened with Nancy Pelosi's husband. Initially, it was reported that the guy, that her husband, Paul Pelosi, answered the door calmly in his underwear and then calmly strolled back toward his attacker who had this hammer. Some people say it wasn't a hammer. It was actually like a vibrator. And, you know, when they say that the glass was broken into his house, the glass was mostly on the outside. So it seemed like someone was trying to break out of the house, actually. But they tried to spin this lie of, well, this guy was like a conspiracy theorist and he believed he was anti-government and he you know, was like a promoter of conspiracy theories when it comes to like QAnon and COVID-19. Like they try to use anything they can to prove that this is the case and to take people's attention away from, you know, what the real issue is.
I already thought it was weird that he got into the most secure house in the United States for somebody who is basically on his way to being in the running for the next U.S. president.
Well, I don't know about Paul Pelosi, but he is third in line or something like that. I think third in line for the presidency. But yeah, I mean, that is how. Yeah. It sounds a lot like Epstein, right? The security cameras were turned off. Just so happens on that day, the cameras were off and people weren't monitoring the cameras. We know what was happening there. It was like his gay lover who got angry about something, about something he was doing. And he like threw a dildo at him, and the dildo flew through the window, and that's the end of that. And they're trying to spin this into something it's not.
There was a short bit in the documentary about Laura Tennyson as well, who is not only building up insulin resistance, but also against conservative immigration, you know, the wrong kind of immigration that destroys communities or something. Why is it that she doesn't take a page out of our book and go live in a liberal bastion instead?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's like whenever you ask people that question, they never have an answer to it. Like if there is someone that moves here because they destroyed Seattle, they helped destroy Seattle, San Francisco, Portland, Oregon, or whatever other city that they come from, and they move here and you ask them this question, like, hey, like why, like if you vote this way, if you feel this way politically, why are you here? Why do you live in one of the most conservative states, especially in North Idaho, if not the most conservative part of the country, the most radical part of the country or whatever. Why do you live here? They never have a good answer for that question.
I would immediately just accuse them of gentrification. You know, it's like, look, we don't have a lot of diversity here in Idaho. You're making it more white, therefore you're making it more bad. So you have to leave. I think that would have been the best argument. Just watch them explode. But you don't know Laura Tennyson herself personally?
No.
Okay. She is some left-wing activist, but I guess that's, you know, giving a megaphone with the international news to a random nobody and then pretending it's some kind of holy crusade, I guess.
Yeah, I've never heard of her, to be honest.
Yeah, she apparently rebelled after the school council became conservative and the quality of education probably degraded. At least that's what she implies. But since we know anymore, of course, we have to wonder that she gets a right to object to school boards becoming more conservative. But whenever we complain about school boards becoming more liberal, doing all this racial indoctrination, that we have to apologize for everything historically, yet can claim none of the credit for it. You know, it feels kind of we get thrown on literal FBI watch lists if you complain about trans indoctrination, for instance. It's really skewed in a way that parents can only agree with liberalism, as a totalitarian system usually does. And liberals can only fight conservatism, and that's always good. It never goes the other way. You know, I feel almost being demoted to the status of evil or insane or a combination of the two if you're not a Democrat, if you're not liberal, if you're not on board with this racial justice, which of course means just punishing European Americans, for instance.
Right. And don't you dare talk about the and don't you dare talk about the Jews either, especially if you're a black man who we can't call, you know, a neo-Nazi. they don't want you to. That's the thing. Like, they don't. And whenever experts come out, like, there was a bunch of experts that came out and talked about, like, Black Lives Matter, and we're like, yeah. Well, hold on a minute. Like, here's the actual, like, statistics. Like, there were data scientists that came out and talked about this a lot, and they were fired from their jobs. There was one guy who worked for Reuters who was fired, who was a data scientist, who was fired. There was an economist who was taken out by Paul Krugman, this, like, yeah. Jewish economist. And a team of his buddies, anyone that came out, especially if they were experts and talked about this, they were censored first. There was a lot of experts on with COVID. Like, you had the Great Barrington Declaration, those like 100,000 doctors or whatever who signed this letter speaking out against the lockdowns.
Yeah.
And there are emails that were leaked that were from like Dr. Fauci, Susan Collins, talking about how we have to shut these people down first. We have to shut these experts down first because they're really skewing the message or whatever. So if you take apart, this is what they can't have. If you take down one of their major pillars, one of their strongest pillars, the rest of the pillars are going to fall. And this is something that this is why it's of the utmost importance to them to control the flow of information, to have yes. all of the control over the information possible, because they can shape the narrative in the way that they want. They can dictate what gets reach, what reaches people and what doesn't reach people, because if they don't, then, you know, things are just going to completely fall apart for them. And I think regardless of how hard they try to censor stuff and how much control they have over the flow of information right now, I still think people are beginning to wake up at a higher rate than ever in history. Yes.
I think right now, especially with black entertainers, you know, they're making it so blatantly obvious. I don't know if you've picked up on the saga of Nick Gannon.
Oh, yeah. I've talked about him before. Yeah, he had...
Made him very obviously kiss the ring, you know, either bow or you're out. And Kanye is, I think, the only odd one out where he just hasn't bent the knee just yet.
Yeah, so Nick Cannon said some things about, like, white people... where he's like, oh, you have less melanin, so therefore you're closer to animals or whatever. That never even got picked up by the media. Once he said something about the Jews, though, he was fired from Viacom. His show was canceled. Yeah. He had to go through this apology tour where he had to go to the Holocaust Museum. Then he had to have multiple rabbis come on his show to, like, re-educate him, and he had him books about, like, the Holocaust. And it wasn't until only then did they allow him to have his stuff back. Kyrie Irving just recently as well.
Yeah.
Shared a link to a video that was on Amazon, to a movie that was on Amazon. He shared it on his Twitter timeline, and the Jews freaked out. And now he's suspended from the Nets, and analysts are saying he's probably going to be kicked out of the NBA. Nike just dropped him for sharing this link. Same thing with Kanye. All Kanye said was that, hey, listen, here are all these people that are giving me problems. They all just so happen to be Jewish. This one doctor who is also Jewish is threatening to forcefully institutionalize me again and drug me up. And so I can't see my kids. And they're like, well, hold on a minute. You can't say that. You can't say they're Jewish. You can't point that out. Call them white people. Call them fellow white people. And then you'll be completely fine.
Yeah.
When
and
you
so,
do something negative, it's white people. You know, never look at the Sackler family. Who's that?
Yeah, there's this one clip of him. He's like, you know, my doctor, I'm not going to say the race. I'm not allowed to say the race of the doctor. It was a Jewish doctor. And he's just like, I'm pretty soon he might be talking about the Holocaust. So we'll see if he just keeps doubling and tripling down like this. But yeah, so, you know, they have to. And this is like, this shows you who your real master is, right? You know,
yeah.
you can get all this stuff about George Floyd and Black Lives Matter and the white man this and the white man that. That is all created by the same people that control every single institution when it comes to shaping culture, when it comes to molding culture in this country. You know, people say, well, they control, Connie says, they control the media, they control the music industry. Well, they also can, but here's the thing. This is the real red pill. They control every single facet of society that is responsible for shaping the way you think, the way you act, the way you dress. Your Christmas music, things that become popular, everything, the way you think politically, academia, how you learn in school, what books you read, everything. That's the real red pill. So you got to rethink everything you think about the world, everything you think you know about the world. You have to rethink that, given now you understanding that it's shaped by.
I always feel we're doing an injustice.
I want to kill you.
Because we say it's the entertainment industry or it's the film industry, for instance. But we don't say, these studios by name are ran by these CEOs, which are these people. And I think that would get the point across. I think there was an article way back when written by, what is it again? David Reich or Zimmerman, I think. And he says, all the CEOs in America and all Fortune 500 companies, they're too white. They're just too white. Of course, the man who's writing the article is Jewish. And what he's doing actually in that article, he's not pointing out white people, because most of the people he's pointed out are actually Jewish. And they're the CEOs of almost 80%, I think slightly over 80% of Hollywood companies and over 80% of record labels. And so it's like, well, all your music, all your movies are being shown, are produced by this one ethno-religious group. And that is a disproportionate amount of power they have compared to the ethnic makeup of America. If they say, whites already have a disproportionate influence, then what is this supposed to be for even less than 2% of the population?
Yeah, but people don't even understand what that means, too. Like, they'll get it. They'll say, okay, yeah, that's true, whatever. But they don't understand, like, what that means. Like, you understand that. People need to understand that. The movies that you watch, the TV shows that you watch, the music that you listen to, this is what shapes people's identity. As bad as that sounds, like, this is true. Right. This is what shapes people's
people
culture.
Get their news from comedy shows and talk shows, not from the news, not from statistics. They get their opinion from popular media.
Yeah, that too. And the way that people act, the way that people think that they're supposed to act, the way that people think that they're supposed to interact comes from the music that they listen to, comes from the movies that they watch as they watch other people, these actors who are, you know, casted by these people in Hollywood. They watch these people, these actors, and how they act and how they interact with other people, and they mimic that. So people have to, knowing this, that's the first part of it. But then the second part is really having a deep understanding of this, the you know, how this affects society.
Yeah. And this is why I think we need to gravitate away from they and just always name exactly who. And I think that can help a lot. I see that the NOS also talks a bit about the Proud Boys, a neo-fascist racist group led by a black man. Is that supposed to indicate that they're also trying to make an Afro-ethno state in Idaho? Or are they trying to take it a different way?
I have no idea. Like, I didn't even see that part of the I didn't watch the whole thing. To be honest,
you get the spiel in January 6th. All these random terms to confuse people, and then it's like, white people are to account for this,
right?
Shelby says that conservative representatives aren't upholding the law for him, though, in my opinion, this echoes the efforts of blue states to not even enforce a shred of Trump era immigration law. is the law in the United States? Just a case of who's reading it these days?
Yeah, 100%.
Closing thoughts, though, given the video highlights and the evils of conservative thinking like religion, weapons, family, freedom, and good neighbors, did you learn any good liberal values in California that may enlighten Idaho in the future? Or is it just a lost cause for the Idahoans to see the light of democratic thinking?
No, I don't think it's a lost cause. I think it's, you know, the way that people are active out here and especially starting to get active out here, a lot of them former Californians, I think there's a lot of hope for places like North Idaho throughout the country. North Idaho is just the one with the most focus on it because it's becoming quickly very effective in opposing this this agenda that they have. I did not learn any liberal values from California that I took with me to Idaho. I think I ran away from specifically those values, and I think a lot of people are as well.
Yeah, I think once you close the book on that, you're not going to look back with any form of nostalgia, which really is curious, I feel. I wonder how it is for when these liberals migrate away from their hellholes, that they really, do they have any nostalgia that they take with them? Or is it purely this media indoctrination that they take with them? You know, because I feel your own memories supersede that of the ones you're supposed to have or what you're supposed to think or what is supposed to make you a good person. But, you know, I've always been the odd one out. I wouldn't hold that as a standard.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know as far as the nostalgia side of things. You're asking me if liberals have nostalgia for what? For the like conservative way of life? That's why they.
Oh no! For the liberal way of life, where they came from.
Why?
I hope what is it actually that they take with them in their heart?
I hope there's like something that's like the last straw for them. Like abortion probably is not gonna drive people out of these conservative states. Like banning abortion, I don't think people actually care too much about this. Maybe
I think it's a parasocial thing, you know. They have to care for somebody else, not themselves. I think whites rarely get abortions anyway, so it doesn't really matter in the grand scheme of things.
Well, the majority, the total, out of the total abortions that happen in the U.S., the majority are still white. I don't know how many Hispanics are mixed in there, but the majority are still white people. Black Americans at a higher rate get abortions than white people do. But that's besides the point. Yeah. What I'm saying is that like banning abortion in, you know, conservative states is not enough to drive liberals out of the states, right? You have to, it has to be, you have to have more. There has to be something more there. Like there has to be, you have to go way further than that. Like a lot of people freaked out about DeSantis's quote unquote, don't say gay bill. It wasn't at all like what it was supposed to be. It didn't go far enough. We need like literal don't say gay bills, like bills that say you cannot say gay in school. You cannot have a pride flag in school. There are some school districts that are actually doing this right now in parts of the country that are conservative where they're banning the pride flag because it's become too political, which is a result of them shoving it down people's throats for so long to where they've made it political their own, which is
That you can burn an American flag, but if you burn a pride flag, it's a hate crime.
I think you can burn a pride flag as long as you're not, it's not someone, you didn't take it from someone else, right? Who's like gay. So I think that you can burn, I think you can burn a pride flag. It's, but here's the thing. The fact that people are iffy about that is the effect that they want. You know, people that are, the fact that people are afraid of doing that is the effect that they want.
I feel dirty doing this. This is so wrong.
Well, not just that, but that they're afraid of a possible like hate crime charge because they're doing it. But, like these are the things that we need to have done in order to keep this place the way you want to keep it. And then, you know, you're going to have to start looking into banning certain media. You're going to have to start looking into banning access to porn sites in conservative states, which is something that you can do. You're going to have to start looking into banning access to certain movies, certain TV shows that have this sort of content and like from access from within the state. then you're going to have to look into revamping the entire school curriculum, making it pro-Christian, pro-family, pro, you know, God, pro-conservative. You have to look into all these different things. And then maybe then you're going to see the reverse effect of what we've been seeing happening for a long time, where, you know, conservatives are leaving these liberal hellholes that they feel uncomfortable in.
You mentioned that your time is running out. I don't see many questions on RD Live, where we are broadcasting right now. I'll check with my admins real quick. But it was great to have you on tonight and for you to do your side of the story as well for what's going on in Idaho and how perhaps there's a little bit of light in America where people can get together and at least live according to their own conscience and not be under this globalist totalitarian system where it demands this uniformity all over the world where people have to live according to their holy laws, basically.
Right. Yeah, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Hey, anytime. And I hope to speak to you on other subjects as well. And I wish you a good weekend.
Anytime. Yeah, I'll look forward to speaking with you next time.
Good night. Are there any questions from the audience as well that we can answer? I'm looking towards my admins. A Gentile elite like Elon Musk is still unable to overcome this group's influence because he is by himself, not in a pack. Yeah, it's hard to pin down Elon Musk. Of course, he comes across as, you know, the libertarian ticket. Every opinion should be equal, you know, because obviously, if you say anything else, you're going to get annihilated immediately. And we live right now in a society where it's even precarious to say that. Opinions that aren't the accepted globalist norm are, you know, have value in society as well. It's developing into a totalitarian political system, which, of course, we have very little influence on. I think people should count their blessings, you know, even though Musk has made some comments about working together with Jonathan Greenblatt of the ADL and various other gatekeepers of a certain religion. You know, be glad that this has happened, because things like this don't come around very often. And, you know, also looked inside yourself to see, like, okay, what can I do to temper my message? Because I know the world is unfair. It is policed. It is tyrannical. I feel that increases the responsibility on the person who broadcasts the message more than, you know, always saying, like, oh, the world is unfair. No, if you know it's unfair, then obviously you have enough intelligence to navigate it. This is how you should look at it. Life is a challenge. There is only survival of the fittest. And your fitness is also decided by how you navigate social problems, intellectual problems. And this is one of them. Where are the rappers in the past who complained about certain managers screwing them over? Ice Cube was one of them. The ADL went after Ice Cube, and he had to apologize. Well, obviously, up until Kanye, what we discussed with Vincent James just now is that Kanye really is, or Yee is the odd one out. And he hasn't bent the knee so far. He's being deplatformed, but Kanye is wealthy. He is really the best indication of a self-made black man with the amount of money he has. And what it's really come down to is that he can be deplatformed, but he hasn't run himself into the ground just yet, which is rare for black people who come to a certain amount of wealth. Because if you look at the NBA, if you look at the NFL, for instance, for Europeans, that's basketball and that's American rugby. Usually these players, they grow broke within the first 2 years of retiring, which is quite phenomenal considering the amount of money they make as these entertainers, basically, because sportsmen are entertainers. You know, this is why this also explains the wage gap between men and women. For instance, you know, most people want to watch male games, so the men get paid more because they are entertaining a larger crowd. for rappers, it's the same thing as in sports. Usually these people go broke really, really quickly after their professional life, and it's the odd one out that doesn't. The more autonomous you are, the less you have to kiss the ring, but most people want to be part of civil society. Yes, even blacks. And they can't really avoid not kissing the ring, so to speak. So you see it, Niganon, he's an entertainer. He folds immediately because the moment he gets excised from the entertainment industry, which is rap, which is, you know, maybe radio presenting, his life is over. And he probably doesn't have enough resources to keep himself upright for any amount of retirement time, you know, for this to blow over. I think for Kanye, you know, if he lays low to the ground, he could easily sit this one out. You know, he has a phenomenal amount of wealth and he hasn't squandered it either. But for most entertainers, this is not the way to go. You know, the moment you're cut off, you're also broke because they don't build up any reserves or excess business. You know, they try to go after your businesses as well. This has also been the case for white professors, for instance. You know, if they're tenured and only for schools where that really means something, like for instance, for Kevin McDonald, you get to keep going. But the moment your tenure gets dissolved, your life is also over. I think even Michael Jackson, he did that song where it's like, oh, screw me, Jew me, never going to do me or some shit. And he also got into deep trouble. He had to go to the Holocaust Museum, probably hyped up on all sorts of drugs by his Dr. Feelgood. You know, he's in an emotional and mental mess. He had to kiss the ring as well. And by all accounts and purposes, he is the most popular and wealthy black man in the history of mankind, you know, excluding various gold trading Kims from Timbuktu. But, you know, a lot of people aren't ready to wage war on the entirety of society. Even for dissidents, it's difficult because they live this pseudo life. You know, it's you broadcast this message so that people know, and it's really sad as that. You know, it's like being in the Soviet Union and you can't really escape from it. You have to navigate the system and hopefully, you know, the NKVD doesn't stand in front of your door at some day. That's really how it is. Basically, they can always force you to apologize, no matter what. It takes a real demon of a man with mission, with resources to pull this off properly. And even then, it's difficult because you're up against something, which is why, you know, this only solidifies what is happening in Idaho. Nobody's as strong as a community of us because they can pick out, you know, individuals within the group. And that may intimidate certain other individuals, which is why they want you to consider yourself an individual. But if you consider yourself a group and an individual gets picked out, well, you know, it's no sweat off your back because you can have a little fund, a little doxing fund, you know, you're down on your luck and we can get you back up. It's no sweat. But individuals are vulnerable and groups usually aren't. And the more you want to really motivate a group feeling, and for whites, this has been dissolved, but I feel it can also be rebuilt with the right kind of management, if you will. Bored Troll says that the Bible survived, but it contains anti-Semitism. Well, most of it theoretically is the Old Testament. So this is basically the Torah, the Pentateuch, and, you know, a Semitic book can't really be anti-Semitic. Then you have the New Testament where it's like, okay, you guys are doing it all wrong. We need a reformation. Not everybody liked that in the past. And then the church has also been anti-Semitic, and Martin Luther was anti-Semitic. History kind of says otherwise. Right now, the Catholic Church has been completely subverted to a degree by, of course, people would say like, no, that's not the real Catholicism. The Pope doesn't count. I'm a sedevacantist, or I'm some other bizarre offshoot of the Catholic Church that is legitimate instead. They would tell you that, Oh, no, we're still anti-Semitic. I don't buy that as much. But, you know, I don't really care as much about what people believe. I just really wish that our people had a safe space, had a fatherland, have a place to call their own where they're not infringed on by other ethnic or other religious groups or other political agendas. You know, it's the very definition of the nation state almost. The nation state starts with the ethnos, which is what the word nation is actually made up of, the founding genetic stock of a particular tribe or group that decides to come together. You know, you've even had heterogeneous groups come together and say, like, look, this is the way we want to live. You know, I say heterogeneously in a liberal fashion, you know, because in the past, before real nations emerging, when it's just a bunch of loose monarchies, these groups were genetically very similar, you know, and there's not much difference to it. You can see a gigantic political divide in Northern Ireland, for instance, when these groups are basically similar, but religion divides them instead. I don't think many Christian denominations are explicitly anti-Semitic in the current day. So yeah, it survived, but you know, anything can pass. You know, what is 2,000 years if you really think about it? When we have descriptions about the pyramids of Giza, for instance, they are as far from the construction of the pyramids from their time as we are to them now looking back, which is truly putting into perspective just how ancient those buildings are. But as you can see, you know, it's a snippet of time in human history. A lot of things happened before Christ, and I feel also a lot of things will happen afterwards. You know, no offense, of course, to Vincent James, who was a staunch Catholic. I was formerly a Catholic as well, but, you know, we all have our movement reasons in which we try to read the way going forward. And everybody has a different definition of that at the moment. I don't think a crisis is yet there where people will bundle together and set aside their petty differences just yet. But I hope that time comes at some point where people just say, like, look, guys, we have bigger fish to fry. Let's see what else we got. Oh boy, people are throwing money at me. Thank you. I never thought people would be that interested in hearing me talk, but here I am. Of course, you know, activism isn't all about money. Countercurrents is, of course, fewer in readership maintained. And if you want to get the message out there, your support is dearly needed. Of course, we need to get people out there. They need to network. They need to put all these groups together. We need to put out a plan. We need to hold workshops to see, like, okay, what is the best political doctrine we can enact? You know, there's a lot of specialty knowledge that needs to come in. And so all your donations go a long way, especially for countercurrents. We're always very happy to have all your support, but it doesn't only have to be that. For instance, for my article about the runestone, about the Ukrainian soldier that fell, and he was an avid believer in a Satru faith, you can also come to Countercurrents and say, look, I have a story I want to share. And we will come to you to put together a nice amount of text. The text I got on the runestone itself was a series of text messages, and I turned it into something nice for that type of story. And the people who brought that to Countercurrents were very touched by that effort. And so if there's anything I can write for you, or if you can write for us, it is always welcome. You know, it's not only about finances. It is about effort. It is about sharing the website. It is about producing content. You know, this is really a group effort, and our members and our readers are just as much our family as we are as a business as well, with our many writers and editors. Let's see. I think those are the last messages of the evening. I will be signing off, and I wish you all a great weekend.